So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This season, for everyone's sake, is brought to you by Carfection.
I would like a pint. No, do you know what? I'd like a hard seltzer, but I'd like it to taste not of lime, but of Carfection.
Oh, that sounds good. Actually, could I, have you got a pint? Could I just have a pint of Carfection, please?
Carfection on YouTube is the place to go for anyone who loves cars that are fast, expensive, luxurious, or just plain cool.
Have you got any crisps, mate? Yeah, can I have some crisps that are all in the shape of cars?
Could I just have a pack of Carfection scratchings, please? Thanks very much.
And don't forget, Carfection features the best-looking car content anywhere online.
Where's the toilet?
Carfection, please. That sounds good. And some chips as well, please.
Fuck off, Phil. Phil, if you were ordering food in a pub, I've ordered food in a pub with you, it would be, oh, can I have some Carfection? But I don't want any tyres or an engine or a roof to the car or any windows. Just the chassis. Just the chassis, please.
Visit youtube.com/Carfection now! Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that is fairly sure these repeated intros were the inspiration for the Tuscan Grand Prix.
Hello to everyone at the FIA that's clearly listening.
Stealing our ideas with your multiple restarts.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, here's another intro. What's going to happen this time?
Wasn't my fault.
Oh, Terry's going too fast.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that's not above using a t-shirt-based controversy to hawk its own merchandise.
Tread carefully, yeah.
No, that's right, ff1s.com/shop.
Welcome to, for Formula One's sake, the F1 podcast that never lifts, even if everyone else is slowing down. Get out the fucking way!
Damn right.
We are going straight to the top of the iTunes chart.
Hello, I'm G Grez, and on this week's episode, we'll be discussing the Tuscan Grand Prix, where we were treated to a thrilling start, and again, loads of stuff happened, and only half the cars finished, give or take, for dramatic effect. That is all to come! Joining me is a man who has downsized. It is Phil Tromans.
Hello, everyone. I've got a tiny car.
Is it because it's getting cold?
It is, yeah. Yeah, you just, if you look at it at the right angle, it doesn't look that small. I've got a little electric Honda E in for the week to test, which is
just
much smaller than my normal car. Yeah, just a week, because I'm for new listeners, I'm a motoring journalist and I sometimes get cars in to test and write about. So, yeah, I've got Honda's tiny little electric car, which is really fun.
Describe it.
It's smaller than a Mini.
We don't care about how it looks. Like, in the inside, is the dashboard all kind of swish? Has it got lots of lights?
Yes. The entire dashboard across the whole length of the car, whole width of the car, from wing mirror to wing mirror, although more on that in a minute, is one big wide screen. And it also doesn't have any wing mirrors. It instead has screens because it has cameras on the outside. Because they're more aerodynamic. So inside, you've got one little screen for the right mirror, one little screen on the other side of the car for the left mirror, and in between, one massive wide screen.
So the wing mirror screens are inside?
Yes.
Is that confusing?
No, not really. They're just slightly closer than they would be if you were looking in the mirror. The passenger side's got a screen as well. And, I haven't tried this yet, it's got an HDMI port. So in theory, I could plug in a telly or like a PlayStation or my computer into it. and do stuff on the screen, which I might try and do tomorrow.
I'm not an expert on electric cars, but I kind of feel like all of this that you're describing is taking up a lot of electricity that could be used driving.
There is that. It does have a little thing on it when you zoom in along to say how much any extra systems you're using is impacting the range. For example, it's been quite warm the last couple of days. I've had the AC on, and there's been a little thing saying, if you weren't using the AC, you'd have 3 more miles out of this.
So you could, for instance, be on the motorway trying to eke out the last of your charge to get to a recharging point.
Yes.
And the car goes, okay, we're going to turn off the wing mirrors for the next 5 minutes.
And how much is this car?
This car is actually quite expensive. The one I've got is about £29,000, which for a very small car with quite a limited range is quite a lot of money. But, you know, early adopters.
It's called a Honda E, though.
Yeah.
And alongside him is a man who has a new drink. It is Terry Saunders.
I'm not saying I've had a boring week, but I went to the shops today to buy my podcast drink, because we're recording from home again today, and this was in the beer fridge. It's called Hard Seltzer. Have you come across this?
No. So,
oh, Mike's. I've heard of Mike's. Yeah, it's basically an Alka-Pop, isn't it?
I don't know what it's... I don't even know what seltzer is, but this is hard seltzer. It's 5%. It's alcoholic sparkling water with a hint of natural lime.
What bit's alcoholic?
Probably the vodka they put in or something. I don't know.
So is this the next step of hipsterdom? You add your water from the tap, and then you add your bottled water, and then you add your flavoured bottled water, and now you've got alcoholic flavoured bottled water.
Ingredients. Purified water, 5 times distilled spirit. It's like methylated spirits or something.
Yeah.
And some lemon. Right, I've opened it. Going to taste it.
Oh, we're doing live tasting.
Well, I was thinking, if there's another lockdown or the races get cancelled, we can go into consumer testing.
Okay.
Drinks podcast.
Let's have it.
This is Mike's Hard Seltzer by Terry Saunders.
It's got a very grown-up taste.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
It's like...
What is a grown-up taste? Just so that...
It's like 7-Up. The first bit of taste, you go, oh, this is just 7-Up. But then there's no sugary rush. It's not very sweet.
Oh.
It's not very nice.
How does it compare to, say, Rich Energy?
Beer? I wouldn't know what Rich Energy tastes like.
No, weren't you with me when we had Rich Energy?
It was horrible. I don't want to talk about it.
I put mine in a plant.
Did you? I've still got a can in my fridge.
I've still got a can under my bed, which I'm hoping one day will be worth something so I can prop my bed up.
Anyway, Chica, have you... What?
Hang on, I haven't finished.
Oh, sorry.
God.
It's not a bad taste. I finished. Chica, what have you been up to?
Well... On Friday, I made the most of the final patch when you could mix with more than 6 friends. And I mixed with maybe 11 other friends.
Ooh.
For my friend's 31st birthday. She's my first friend to turn 31. And we had a lovely time.
We turned 31 a while ago.
Sorry.
Yeah,
but I didn't see you turn 31. Despite being 31, she still got drunk and was sick.
Well, you've got to enjoy that when you're still young.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, though, Phil, when we were 31 and were being sick, the sick didn't potentially have coronavirus spreading out into everyone's faces.
No, that's true, yeah. Although I did try and avoid being sick in my friends' faces if I could avoid it.
You were one of those, were you?
Yeah, I was a prude.
This was F1's first visit to Mugello, and no one was quite sure how it would all go. But one man who thinks F1 is onto something is Paul Hinton. He says, I like these random tracks with no facilities to recover crashed cars. State-of-the-art facilities to ruin all the fun. I think at the end of each race, the winner should pick the name of a city to stage the next race. Anywhere that has any form of track could be Rotterdam or anywhere, Liverpool or Rome.
Hey.
Discuss.
Hang on a minute, is he... Hey. That's our job, to take the piss out of his name. Is he taking the piss out of his own name?
It's Paul Hinton. Regular donor Paul Hinton, who every time he donates, you make the beautiful South joke. And he's
so now he's
it.
Beating me to
and
it.
You forgot.
I wasn't paying attention, I was on WhatsApp, didn't you hear what you said?
he's making a beautiful South joke.
You're
they did a song.
Embarrassed.
Could be Rotterdam or anywhere, Liverpool or Rome. Brilliant.
There's definitely a good point that this race felt old school. And we always think old school meant... cars conking out because of reliability, but actually just having a tight track where recovering a car is hard, that means you've got a safety car or stop the race or whatever, did give it a kind of old school feel of just like anything could happen at any point.
It was. I have to say, I was not full of I wasn't particularly looking forward to this race. I thought it would be fun on Saturday to see the cars going around the track because it looks like a fun track to drive, but I didn't think the race would be much good. And in fairness, there was hardly any overtaking apart from on the main straight. But all the other stuff made that actually quite interesting, as you say. The fact that if you get it wrong, you probably have a massive accident. Whether that's a good thing in the modern safety-obsessed environment, I'm not entirely sure, but... We'll leave that for somebody else to think.
Stroll's crash was exciting.
It was.
The big fucking pile-up at the restart was exciting.
Yeah.
Even the first corner crash, which wasn't even that much. Because in the old days, you'd see all the cars come around and you'd expect there to be some smoke at the back. And now that just doesn't happen. They always get through the first corner. This was a corner where they didn't get through. I approve.
The topsy-turvy nature of the race meant that this season's Pierre Gasly, Alex Albon, scored his very first podium as he came in third in the Red Bull that no one but Max Verstappen can drive. But that meant Daniel Ricciardo missed out again, and that means no tattoo for Cyril Abiteboul. But Will Bowen wants to know, who gives a shit? He says, why are the F1 commentators so obsessed with the Danny Rick tattoo bet? Googling tattoo parlours and mentioning at length every time there was a yellow car on the screen. Enough already. If they have managed to turn a quirky little bet into a fucking nightmare, it's not as if it was a boring race with nothing else to talk about.
They do seem to have run away with it a bit, doesn't they? Don't they? I mean, in fairness, we're guilty of this as well.
No, but the thing is, the Sky F1 commentary team, they're just a bit like, you know, kind of like lads at a pub. You know, if you go to the pub and you're having a drink with your friend and there are some like lads next to you doing some bants and they're just like, oh, you're not funny.
Do you worry that people might think about us back in the day when we're at the pub, though?
No, because we're funny.
Anyway, that was Ricciardo's best chance of getting a podium, and he didn't get it, and so the tattoo's not happening, so hopefully that'll die a death.
Good.
One of the 1,000 restarts at the Mugello race saw a large pile-up as the world's finest drivers forgot how to drive down a completely straight bit of track. Now, Nicole Dykeman said, I think the drivers are suffering from so many races in such a short time frame that they are making errors and crashing, which is keeping things interesting for viewers. But how long until someone gets seriously injured? And Nick Peppel thinks something's fishy, though. He says, Grosjean, make a deal with the devil for this race, managing to escape the gravel trap and demolition derby on the front stretch, only to finish out of the points anyway. How can you be that lucky and squander it?
Let's talk about that.
Well, before that, let's just say, I think that would be the most Grosjean thing, to make a deal with the devil. And the devil goes, okay, you've sold your soul to me. What do you want in return? 12th. Yeah. I'll sell for 12th.
Maybe 40 sales of my cookbook.
Yeah. Can you just stop the returns? Stop people sending it back.
Should we talk about the track? Restart. The second restart. Well, the first restart, the second start. How many restarts? Oh, God, I can't even remember. So this was the rolling restart.
Two restarts.
There was two restarts and one start.
But one of the restarts was a rolling start and one of them was... Well, were there two standing starts? No, there were two standing starts.
Yeah, but one was a start and one was a restart.
Safety car. This was the safety car start.
There was a start, a restart, and another restart. God, so the first restart was safety car. The second restart was a standing start because that of the safety car at the red
line. So this was the safety car start where everyone piled into each other at the back. What did you think? What did you think of that whole thing? Whose fault was it?
Okay, this is going to be controversial because he wasn't technically breaking the rules. But I think it was Bottas' fault.
Interesting.
Because he was holding the pack up like more than they normally do on a restart. He was weaving about and like, he kept nearly hitting Hamilton and he was going super, super slow. So it's not his fault in terms of he did anything wrong, because he's perfectly entitled to do what he likes and slow the track, the cars down. But he left it so late that I think all the others must have just been going, well, he must have gone by now, because no one else would wait this long. Fucking hell, Valtteri. I think the safety car line was too far forward or back. I can't work out which.
Interesting. Okay. I was initially going to violently disagree with you, but then on hearing your explanation, you're saying he's not necessarily his fault, but he was the cause.
Yes.
Okay. I would probably sort of agree with that, but equally I would say he's absolutely entitled to do that if he wants, because he can, and he can, you know, he has the opportunity to do anything he can to try and steal a jump on the people behind him and get away, and that's his prerogative as leader. It was later than usual. My thoughts are that the drivers behind that all piled into each other did so because they guessed when everyone was going to go. They tried to preempt it in order to get a march on them, rather than actually reacting to what happened, which makes it their fault. You shouldn't guess what's going to happen.
It just kind of sums up Bottas's year, though, doesn't it? It's like he's trying to be clever, and he causes £3 million worth of damage.
I think it's a lot more than that, probably.
I don't know. It was quite exciting. I mean, it was scary. It was one of the, you know, when you see some of the in-car footage from the people behind, it was pretty fucking scary, because it was basically like coming up to a stop car
and then piling into it.
But I do wonder if actually it was more the track layout. It just wasn't very good for it, because it just felt like...
I think it could have happened on any track, to be honest. I mean, from what I haven't gone back and seen it in detail, but I heard that the lights on the top of the safety car went out quite late, so Bottas didn't have a huge amount of time to prepare his strategy for starting again, and that's why he did it so late. But, I mean, it shouldn't really matter. And if that's the case, then that could happen on pretty much any track. I don't really know the way around it.
As a driver, have you ever seen an accident in your rearview mirror that you may have caused?
Not that I may have caused. I've seen...
Is this an insurance advert?
Have you not been involved in an accident that was your fault?
I just wonder if there's that feeling where you go, oh, that might have been me. And you kind of keep going because you're not sure.
No, I've never caused an accident. I mean, I've done something where I've gone, oop, shouldn't have done that. And then usually just waved a hand and gone, sorry. But no.
How about you, Chica?
I once pulled out in front of a lorry because I was chatting to my friends excited on the way to Glastonbury.
I mean, maybe that's what was going. Maybe that's what happened here. Maybe that's what happened here. Everyone would have been talking to their engineers.
Yeah.
And if the safety car
Glastonbury.
Yeah. If the safety car came in late and everyone was like, "Okay, I've got to go. But the race is starting. I've got to go. Oh, really? Okay.
Oh my god. Crash. What drinks have you packed?
You say drinks. I think we all know what you were talking about.
Hard seltzer.
Another man that managed to avoid carnage but also any points was George Russell. Russell Trigg asks, is George Russell the Tim Henman of F1, incapable of winning anything, not even a point? And Ross Chaplin says, George Russell and not scoring points, name a more iconic duo. I'll wait. Tim Henman
Simon and Garfunkel.
Tim Henman's a very good way of putting it, actually, I think.
Has George Russell had a hill named after him?
Well, he's got a square.
Very good.
I don't know. Tim Henman got to the semi-final, didn't he? So that would be like 4 points in Formula One.
Did he never win Wimbledon?
No.
No.
I mean, I don't really follow it.
You'd know.
Well, you're not going to be appearing on our tennis podcast we're about to start.
What's it called?
Fucking tennis.
Can we actually start that?
Just none of us know anything about tennis.
Brilliant. I mean, we barely know anything about F1, so.
True.
Yeah, let's say George Russell seems like a nice guy, and you know he's got.
You don't
points.
Get points of being nice, do you?
He's got the points of our hearts, though, hasn't he? He's got the points of the British public.
Not really. He's starting to piss me off.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, everybody pisses you off because you're notoriously fickle. What's he done now to piss you off?
Just getting a bit moody.
He's not like moody. It. He's adorable.
He's a bit moody on the radio. Like there was something where he was moaning at the team, and I'm just like, come on, you're driving for Williams. That's like moaning at a dead dog.
It is interesting to hear him on the radio, because he does have a bit of a different personality when he's sort of doing all the bants with Albon and Norris in the, you know, the Sky promotional things or whatever he's messing about with. And then on the radio, he doesn't take any shit at all. He reminds me of like some dickheads I used to work with.
Do you think it's because you can't see his face? Because he's got such a sweet face. Well, you know, he's got like a baby face. So if he was getting angry at you to your face, you'd just go, oh. But when he's on the radio and you can't see him, he's just like quite fierce.
So, of course, the race at Mugello was in large part a celebration of Ferrari's 1000th F1 race. Darren Shepsman says it was the perfect event. He says this was definitely a Ferrari tribute race. Bad pit stops, Stroll trying to recreate a Schumi crash, at Silverstone. Bad strategy calls, everything Ferrari have perfected over the years.
Yeah, pretty much. Didn't we work out from someone on Twitter months ago that the average finishing place of Ferrari, if you look at all the races, was eighth? And where did Leclerc finish?
Eighth. But he did finish.
But he did finish. Like we said back then, Ferrari have had some highs, but their average isn't great. And this was a perfect race to sum up the entirety of Ferrari.
Well, the fact that they're actually, when you dig down into it, decidedly mediocre.
Yeah. They have the Schumacher years and your Fangio, whatever, and a bit of stuff in the 70s. But apart from that, pretty much dog shit.
So in other news, four-time world champion and multiple Ferrari disappointments, Sebastian Vettel will have a new home next year, and that is at Aston Martin. Vettel, who was unceremoniously dumped by Scuderia for being a bit shit now, will have another chance to prove he didn't fluke his success at Red Bull by partnering Lance Stroll at his daddy's team, currently Racing Point. All that means that Sergio Perez, who is by far the better driver and saved the team from bankruptcy not that long ago, is out in his ear, despite the fact that he had a contract to continue his race. Oh, F1, how we love you.
I think this is great. I think Perez should be out in his ear. Wow. There should be no room for sentimentality just because he saved the team.
He saved the team
before Stroll brought the team, so he saved it before it was his team. So that's like...
He saved the team before, so that Stroll had something to buy.
If you bought something on eBay, like a telly...
like Stroll bought
in. Yeah, and you were watching the telly, and some guy comes around and he's just like, oh, can we watch telly? You were like, who are you? And he went, oh, this is my telly. This is my telly before I saved it. And you'd be like, well, fuck off, mate. That's my telly now.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. All right, but if...
I think that's the best way.
If when he watched my telly, the telly was considerably better, maybe I'd consider it.
Who's ahead of who in the championship, Phil?
Well, he's had coronavirus and missed two races.
Whose fault was that? Just because his mum was in an accident?
Oh, it's probably his mum's. I don't know. Or it might have been the entire country of Mexico.
Did Lawrence Stroll... cause the accident.
Wow. I was going to say, did he lick his mum or something? But you went to
it. It would be a shame if something was to happen to your mum, Sergio, wouldn't it? Just saying.
Wow. No, I mean, you know, now you've said it, it's out there. It's a distinct possibility. We don't know how evil Lawrence Stroll is or may not be, according to our lawyers. I think it's a shame that he's gone, and I'm intrigued to know where he's going to go. Perez, because he's good enough. He's good enough that he should have a reasonable seat. I mean, he's never going to win a championship, but
He's either going to go to Alpha, or he's going to go to Haas, or he's going to go to IndyCar, or he's going to fucking retire. Don't care.
He won't retire. He'll be racing Le Mans if nothing else, surely. Or Formula E. Fell to Aston Martin then.
I said it from the start of the year, so I'm feeling pretty happy.
Yeah, fair play. You did. I thought he was going to retire.
I should have put some money on it. Could have paid off my dog's trust debt.
How do you reckon he'll do?
Well, I think he'll do better. I think Ferrari have treated him like shit. He just needs to be a little bit kind of mollycoddled and wrapped in cotton. And Ferrari have just kind of got him there and went, that's your toilet. A bucket in the corner and win a fucking championship. And he's like, but what about like strategy? Shit in the bucket, win the championship.
Do you think they're surprised? Do you think anyone's surprised?
No, we all saw this coming from a mile off.
Yeah.
Particularly Terry. Terry saw it from several miles off. But I think the rest of us had seen it come in for at least a month.
While Ferrari has been disappointing of late, I think we can all agree that Sauber's move to become Alfa Romeo has been a crowning success. And it's one that is set to continue. As team principal Frederic Vasseur says, a deal is almost done to keep the Alfa name for a while longer yet, and probably work more closely with Ferrari, which supplies the team engines and shares a parent company with Alfa. Officially, the team is still owned by Sauber and merely branded as Alfa, rather than being a proper factory team.
Yay. Maybe.
Does it matter? I don't. I mean, great. Oh, that shit team at the back has got a name of a car.
But the thing is that they are the most anonymous team by a mile. Like that, because they're not as shit as Williams, so nobody pays them quite as much attention as they do to Williams.
Forgettable livery, forgettable drivers. Even Raikkonen, it's not even funny anymore. It's just a bit sad, isn't it?
But I don't really know what they can do to make it more exciting, because Alfa actually has a really good history, which they don't make nearly enough about. And they make some unreliable but good to drive road cars, which they don't make enough about, apart from that weird advert that's on at every break during Sky.
Time to time, take thy time.
Oh, that Kimi Raikkonen is bang on. I mean, Ferrari can't sort Ferrari out, so I don't know how they're going to sort Alfa out.
So, racism news. And Lewis Hamilton wore a T-shirt on the podium at Mugello that read, "Arrest the cops who killed Breonna Taylor," a reference to the police killing in the US where an unarmed black woman was shot dead in her bed. Is that political? Maybe, says the FIA, which was looking into whether or not Hamilton broke any rules. Those rules, by the way, state the FIA shall refrain from manifesting discrimination on account of race, skin colour, gender, sexual orientation, ethnic or social origin, language, religion, philosophical or political opinion, family situation or disability in the course of its activities and from taking any action in this respect.
I mean, this is just sad, isn't it? I mean, after all the fiasco of the whole "all we're against racism" thing, which was frankly incredibly badly managed for the first half of this season and still not brilliant now they're like, oh, maybe we shouldn't be letting him say that, oh, the police shouldn't kill unarmed people in their beds, like it's some sort of political thing. Bloody ridiculous.
I mean, it's bloody great for if you go on like Twitter, whatever, the BBC do a story about it and there's just a bunch of white men in the comments going, I'm not racist, but I just don't like it. You shouldn't talk politics. No, I watch the sport for white men to win things and I don't like it.
Yeah. I don't watch F1. I mean, not watching F1 for politics is like not watching Parliament for politics or something. Mm. I mean, politics is the most interesting thing about F1. But this isn't politics. This is just like, maybe some of this shit shouldn't happen. Maybe don't kill unarmed people in their bed. You notice that Mercedes have said that they haven't had a problem with it at all. Some people after the race were like, whoa, Toto Wolff's not going to be very happy about this. And he came out straight out and said, yeah, that's fine with me.
I think that's going to be the only way that Bottas is going to beat Hamilton this year, is he's got to go full-on racist.
I mean, that would be out of left
this
field, in fairness. That would ruffle some feathers.
Tell us how wrong we are. You can tweet us at For F1's Sake or find us on Facebook where we're For F1's Sake or email us at wrong@ff1s.com. Alternatively, if you think we're right, buy us a beer. We don't function well without it. So unless you want the podcast to become sloppy and unprofessional, you better keep us well lubricated. So if you do buy us a pint, then you will be joining the ranks of these fine people. Christopher Lee.
I mean, we've run out of jokes about Hammer Horror. Thanks for the beer.
Yeah, thank you very much, Christopher.
Cole Schneider.
Oh, he sounds like someone who'd be on the Titanic.
Sounds like a NASCAR driver, as far as
Why
I can tell.
Why would he be on the Titanic?
Just unlucky. Just one of those unlucky people.
Thank you, Cole.
Bad luck. Billy Armstrong.
Lead singer of Green Day. Brilliant.
Do you know what? I've always thought he'd like Formula One. You can just tell with his eyeliner and his ties.
Yeah, brilliant.
Have you seen a Green Day video lately? Because they do a lot of lighting to make them look as though they're not old.
Wow, no, they are getting on a bit now. I mean, Billy, thank you very much for taking some of your probably millions of dollars and sending it our way. Much appreciated. And really liked Dookie. It's one of my favourite albums in the 90s.
Paul Hewings.
Thank you, Paul, regular donor.
At school, were you called Paul Spewings? That's all I got. Nothing.
Davian Dent.
Thank you, Davian.
Well, we've met Davian because he came to our recording when we did a live recording.
Did he buy us a beer then?
Bought us many beers.
There you go. Brilliant. Thank you for continuing the... Well, there you go, everyone. Be more like Davian.
Alfred Steinecker.
That's a good name. That's a very good name. It sounds like a beer and a butler and maybe a footballer.
I think it feels like it could be. Yeah, I like it.
Steinecker. Thank you, Alfred.
Aaron Dulles.
I'd say he sounds like a kind of lampshade in Habitat.
Wow.
Okay.
The Aaron or Aaron Dulles.
Kevin Rhodes.
All roads lead to Kevin.
Yeah, I think we've done that before, haven't we? Well, we're doing it again.
This is the problem with this bit, is that I always go for the first thing my brain does, and my brain will tread down the off repeat.
We should probably write down who gives us money so we always remember.
Felipe Diaz.
We had him last week.
Before.
Yeah, he sounds like a former Samba driver, but thank you very much. Fun fact, did you know that Diaz is Fernando Alonso's actual last name? Not Alonso.
What?
Yeah,
there you go. Fun fact. Pardon?
But it's Diaz with a Z, so it's not quite the same thing. Diaz.
Why is he Alonso?
Well, it's a Spanish naming convention where everyone has two surnames, and the first one is the one that people normally use, which is their dad's surname, and then they have their mum's surname at the end.
So Carlos Sainz Jr. is actually called Carlos Jr.
I mean, yeah, maybe. His mum, Edwina Jr.
Thomas William Armstrong Horrocks, who says, "New fan, loving the unique approach. Feel free to take the piss out of the name. You don't need to tell us, Thomas."
Horrocks.
Great name.
Mm. Yeah, it's nice.
Don't tell me what to fucking do. Your name is beautiful. Great.
We really like
Live it.
Yeah.
I mean, do you really need four names?
You haven't got a middle name, have you, Terry?
I have got a middle name.
Have you?
What is it?
Nigel Mansell.
So you've got four
my
names.
My middle name. No, Nigel Mansell, all one word.
Oh, right.
No, my middle name is John, the most boring of all middle names.
Oh. Do you know what my middle name is?
Phil.
It's also John.
We've had this discussion before.
Let's do it again.
I feel like we have.
We are really
What's your middle name, Chica?
John.
There is Jane.
Hey, much more exciting.
Long-term listeners will be like, yeah, we all know. How do they not remember? I've listened to this conversation on the podcast every week.
Okay, we're still on donations here. Right, Michael Richmond, who says, £3.60 a pint. You three should come up north and save a fortune, or at least get a case of cheap beer from Aldi. Keep up the good work.
So I think that's because on the website, we've worked out the average pint. There's some kind of statistic. The average pint in the UK is £3.60.
Oh,
that's insane.
Not
maybe hang on, Michael, have we been down south too long? That he
but
thinks
Michael Richmond, yeah, he's saying £3.60 is expensive. I'll have you know, Michael, that in this very fair London, you can get north of £6 for a pint these days.
Oh, easily. I mean, that's not in London. I'm not in London. I'm in Sussex, and I had a half the other day that I swear was at least £3.60.
You can't get tap water for £3.60.
No.
True.
It's very true.
Fact.
Well, maybe we should go up north.
Jason Weber, who sent us a very long email that we don't have time to read out. But Jason, thanks for the beer money. Please leave us a 5-star review anyway. And yes, Terry is a bag of dicks.
Yeah, fine. Long.
Glenn Kelly, who has an unusual request, which is to congratulate his girlfriend, who doesn't listen to the podcast, on getting her degree. Glenn, we'd be happy to, but you don't give us her name. So if you want us to do that, you have to buy us more beer and actually include that fairly vital piece of information.
Or we play double or quits.
What does that mean?
I guess three women's names. And if one of those happens to be his girlfriend, then he has to give us £20.
Wow.
Or £50 donation to the Dogs Trust, which comes off my debt.
Yes. No, that sounds good.
Okay, so Glenn, congratulations to your girlfriend Annabelle on her degree. She's really deserved it. Glenn, congratulations to Amy for her degree. She really deserves it. And Glenn, congratulations to Alice on her degree.
Three A's.
She really deserved it. Yeah.
She got three A's in her degree. That's a very high score.
That's good.
Now, we appreciate these are difficult times at the moment, so if you don't have the means to buy us a beer, why not leave us a review on Apple Podcasts? That doesn't actually cost anything, and neither does making it 5 stars. Thanks very much. Love you. Mwah. And now it's time for the teams. Mercedes. Bottas overtook Hamilton on the start. Shame his race had two more starts that he screwed up. Bottas looked utterly beaten by the end of it. What can we do to help?
Nothing.
Do you remember a few years ago we had the campaign to get a hug for Jolyon Palmer because he was having a bad year?
Do not remember that, no.
I do.
Yeah, that was a big part of our year.
Was it?
Yeah.
Sounds rather nice for us. I seem to remember you used to be quite harsh towards Jeremy.
I think it was quite patronising.
Patronising. Because we're doing the same thing now. We want a campaign just to have us have a hug. It would just be great if, like, You know when Martin Brundle does the interview at the end, he just went, "Do you want a hug, mate?" And he'd be like, "Yeah, I would actually." And he went, "Sorry, can't, COVID. Yeah, you just better be better at driving."
Yeah. It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, Bottas actually had a really good weekend up until the point where it actually mattered. Like, he was fastest in all the practice sessions. And then even in qualifying, he was only, what, a hundredth or a couple of hundredths of a second slower than Hamilton. He got past him at the start. But then, when he actually had to stay ahead, not only did he not get ahead of him at the final restart, he lost a place or two, didn't he? So, yeah, screwed it up at the vital moment again, which is why he's not going to be world champion. And he'll always be number two at Mercedes.
But you've got to feel, like, from his point of view, you've got to feel just like this year... I mean, we all hate 2020, but he must just be like, fuck this.
I think it's in his best interest. I think it's in everybody's best interest for him to give up. Like, just admit the fact that you're a number two. There's no shame in it. Every team's got to have a number two. You're a number two at the best team. You're still a very good racing driver. You're just not as good as Hamilton. Stop trying to be, because you'll only be disappointed. Forget about Hamilton. Focus on trying to beat everybody else.
And how is your life coaching going, Phil?
It's going pretty well. You know, freelancer's got a freelance.
What about Hamilton? He's very good.
He's very good.
He's good, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's all right.
Well,
he's got your respect, Harry.
It took him a while to sort of get going. As I say, like, Bottas had the measure of him all through Friday and Saturday, but then, you know, he pulled it out of the bag when he needed to, eventually. It was looking a little bit dubious at one point, but... Even then, I'll be honest, I'd have probably backed him to somehow find a way past Bottas, because, well, he's Bottas.
So Red Bull! Now, Alex Albon has only gone and done it. He is the first Red Bull driver in 2 years that isn't Max Verstappen to have gone and got a podium. Aside from Gasly winning last week, Max got a start that made even Bottas look good, and then he got really angry. Did you see that?
He was very angry.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, he was furious.
But it wasn't his fault that he got a bad start, was it? The car... I mean, he actually got a really good start for about 40 metres.
Mm. Yeah.
And then suddenly the car stopped working.
Mm. Yeah, well, Albon said all weekend they had shit starts, and when they had the red flag at the end, Albon was shitting himself because he was just like, this is it.
Yeah.
No chance.
It was a weird one, wasn't it? I think, was it a software issue with the Honda engine or something along those lines? It basically looked like he got a monster start, went past Bottas, and then just had no power at all and went backwards by about 10 places and then got caught up in the accident at the second corner.
Which is weird, because I know that F1 engines, power units, whatever, are really complicated. But you would think getting going would be a pretty key part of it. You want engines to start, keep going, and stop.
Yeah.
Those are the three things. Basically, everything else is just faff.
No, I mean, maybe they had a new guy who hadn't read Terry Saunders' Introduction PowerPoint. To Engineering. Red Bull, in theory, should have been really good at this track. And I suppose, you know, in the end, they were good enough that even Albert managed to get a podium, but that's only because 8 other drivers crashed out. That's instrumental in their performance generally again, isn't it? You know, they've got one of the best designers ever, and they just can't quite get it together when they need to, which is why Mercedes just keeps romping home with everyone. It's another of them, you know, them fucking up as well as Mercedes doing well.
On a wider point, though, I think Newey's lost it.
You reckon?
Yeah. We all say he's still great, but I think his time's gone.
I mean,
drawing,
you know,
with a bit of pen and paper, no.
Yeah, we'll always have the Leighton House.
Yeah, no, he's a great designer, but I think he's a super. He's like one of those aging rock bands that you kind of go, why are they still touring?
Like who?
Any band that you like, Phil.
Iron Maiden? Wrong. Never been better. Actually, no, even I know that's not true. So they are still.
Manic great. Street Preachers?
No, they're not as good as they used to be.
Meridian?
Wow. I'm not a big Meridian fan, but that's an interesting that that's where you went. Of all the bands, that was your third choice of big band. Okay. Yeah, Red Bull are the Marillion of Formula One teams at the moment.
Yep.
Renault! Cyril Abiteboul almost got a tattoo, but like a laser removal service, Albon pipped Ricciardo to the podium. Ocon was on fire. but not in a good way.
No, in the bad. Actually being on fire way.
What happened?
Car caught fire.
Well, George Russell was behind him, moaning on the radio about, oh, that one's on fire in front of me, you should stop, I can smell it. Oh, I can smell it in my cockpit. It's like, fucking hell, George.
It's more like stick he'd farted or something.
Yeah, stick to your own
sir,
shit.
Sir.
I don't know. I mean, it means the tattoo thing's going to go on for another fucking week
no,
or two.
No, it won't. He's not. When else is he going to have a chance? There's no more really high-speed circuits. Those were the ones.
What about a Grand Prix around the M25?
That'd be great. I mean, quite long laps.
How long is the M25?
I'd hazard a guess that at Formula One speeds, you're looking at 45 minutes a lap. Wasn't it years ago in one of those a computer game? Was it Toka Race Car? You could actually do laps of the M25 as one of the tracks.
What about Ricciardo?
I mean, he was good, but the car's not quite good enough. Yeah. There wasn't much
I mean,
he
reminded us. He reminded us that he's as good as he is, but he also reminded us that the Renault is not that good.
Yeah, no, yeah. And genuinely, he has this year actually, because I always rated Ocon fairly highly, and Ricciardo's wiped the floor with him so far.
Yeah, he's been a bit anonymous, hasn't he, Ocon?
No, completely. Mm. Yeah, I mean, he might have had a bit of a bad luck in terms of his car catching fire and stuff, but no, Ricciardo's had the measure of him pretty much.
You make your own luck
continuously. Do you? Tell that to Lance Stroll.
Oof.
Racing point. Speaking of which, yet again, Lance Stroll got a free tyre change under a red flag, but those tyres went pop in a big way. Perez came home fifth, but he looks a bit miserable, really, doesn't he?
Well, understandably, as we've discussed, he must be really fucked off.
Mm.
Do you also think that Perez is now thinking, and I missed two races because of the coronavirus, and those cunts could have all fucking got it in that team. I'd have happily just given it to all of them. Yeah, they've just kind of shat me out, and I took 2 weeks off to save their fucking grandparents' lives. Fuck them.
I did see on, I think it was maybe Instagram, one of the mechanics basically left him a message in an Instagram comment saying, mate, I'm really gutted for you, this is rubbish. And he replied going, oh, it's not ideal, is it? So I think it's an upper management thing rather than the team themselves. I think the team themselves yeah, are but like, then oh, that- what? He's really good.
The mechanic's next post was like, Aston Martin forever. Fuck. Who?
Stroll's crash was a pretty scary one. Because in fairness,
scary.
For all we take the piss out of Stroll, and we will continue to do so, he was reasonably good this weekend.
Yeah. Stroll is a reasonably good driver.
Yeah.
We've always said
good,
it.
Not he as good is, as Perez.
I don't know.
No, he's not.
The thing is, Perez has always been a bit of a one-trick pony of making the tyres last and getting good results in the most boring way. Like, you're never going to get a fucking on-track...
It's what the sponsor's like.
I know, but it's never going to be a, oh my God, he just sent it. It's not. There's no T-shirt saying, oh, I'm going to send it, or oh, I'm just going to save my tyres. Oh. And, you know, that's just his way, and that's his thing, and his time has come. Great. See you later. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Do you want Perez to stay, or are you not?
No, I want him to go to IndyCar or something, and we'll just watch. He'll win the Indy 500 next year. Yep. I want every driver to leave F1 and win the Indy 500 apart from Alonso. So I want, like, Sato's won it twice. I want Kvyat to go and just be like, oh, I was just on holiday, but oh, I won it. Oh, whoops. I just want everyone to win it apart from Alonso, who's going to try it every year and never win.
I was in a mall in Wisconsin and I won an entry to the Indy 500. But yeah, Stroll's big exploding tyre was quite the thing. That was quite a high-speed crash, as we've already talked about.
Well, there was that point in the race because they told Lewis and Bottas to stay off the kerbs, didn't they?
Mm.
Which is weird because this race is basically just go around the kerbs. The whole track is just...
Yeah, there was a chicane where you had more kerb than track.
And Hamilton said, well, how am I supposed to go fast if I can't go on the kerb? And they went, just stay off it!
Continue driving fast.
Track limits was a weird one this week, because didn't the FIA just kind of go, we're not going to bother with track limits, do what you like?
Well, I mean, it seemed a little bit lax this week, which is actually quite fun, because it seems like track limits is when you bin it into the barrier at 170 miles an hour.
Yeah, but then he got like...
Do you reckon he got his lap time deleted for track limits after he crashed into the wall?
Well, Grosjean going off so far, he's gone through like the Tesco's car park and picked up some shopping on the way around.
Yeah, but, you know, his time would still be terrible even with that, so...
McLaren. Sainz hurt his hand in a crash. Norris avoided the carnage and came home in sixth, which is a bit meh, really, as a team.
They're probably relatively happy with sixth, I would have thought, because they
were. Yeah, but not many people finished.
Quick, no, that's true. Yeah. But he did. He did finish.
True.
Yeah, I'm just looking where they qualified. So Sainz qualified ninth. So yeah, they really didn't have much pace this weekend. Norris didn't even make it to Q3. So to go from 11th to 6th.
Renault and McLaren. Yeah, Renault and McLaren do just seem to pick straws each week of which one's going to be good.
Although, in fairness, they fluked their victory last week, but still.
How dare you?
No, they're all a bit up and down in the midfield at the moment. There's no consistency, really, is there? Have they all got a podium now, apart from Renault, of the midfield teams?
You see, this gets boring, doesn't it?
No, I mean, it's exciting.
Is it more exciting than when it's like, which one's going to get the podium this week?
I mean, yeah, that's how Formula One should be.
Because otherwise, it's probably going to be Verstappen, but which one's going to get fifth this week?
Ferrari! Painted in the historic hues of Vimto, Leclerc at one point looked like he was going to sneak another podium, but he ended up in a lowly eighth. Vettel scraped a point. Ferrari!
What I mean, it was woeful. Let's talk about the paint. I mean, that's the best thing, isn't it?
I really liked it.
I didn't really give a shit.
Ferrari!
It was such a funny colour. It was almost like a boar at a dinner party that we got. Oh, actually, did you know that the first Ferraris were more of a kind of shade of burgundy? And you're like, I don't care. Like, just because you know a fact doesn't mean you're better than me, Dad.
So, I mean, I quite like the idea, but I wish they'd gone a bit further with it. I wanted to see like wire wheels and a helmet design on Vettel that looked like he had a cloth helmet and a pair of goggles on or something like that.
They should have just brought out the 1950 car. It's probably quicker.
Probably would have been better, actually, yeah.
And yeah, they're both finished, which is a lot. Yeah. It's just more than a lot of teams.
They both got points.
Yeah.
And still, I think, are they still in the bottom? Are Ferrari still in the bottom half of the team's championship? I don't know where they are now. Yeah, they're still sixth.
Great. Good.
And then quite a long way behind Renault.
AlphaTauri. It was hard to beat last week, so Gasly opted for the sensible route and went out on the first lap.
Best thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, Olivier Panis, when he won the 1996 Monaco Grand Prix, went out on the first lap in the next race.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So there's a bit of French consistency.
Look at that. Are you dropping your facts in?
I heard it on the coverage. I'm pretty sure it's a Jack Nicholls fact. I was listening on the radio for most of this race.
You can't steal facts from the coverage because people listening to this probably listen to that as well.
I mean, do they think we come up with the stuff ourselves? We don't even.
No one
right.
listens to the radio.
All of our jokes are taken from obscure Canadian comedians.
I only listened to the radio coverage because I was on a train.
Kvyat, what did you think of him?
He finished seventh, didn't he?
The only time I saw him was when he was out with the car during one of the red flags and he looked a bit knackered. He did better than Gasly. I mean, Gasly was pretty woeful this weekend, wasn't he? He was out in Q1. I mean, he was absolutely shit slow from the off. Did he cause the first crash? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, but I guess what can you do? You can't match winning at Monza, so why bother trying?
Why even try? Do you reckon that was Franz Tost's speech before the race?
Well, I think
set them all down.
As a racer, Gasly was probably going into the weekend going, I can capitalise on this and win another one. But obviously, you know, it was a fluke. So it's probably best. Well, he probably didn't because, you know, egos and everything. He probably thought that he transcended the car or something. So they probably would have done best just to, like, just take out the oil pipe or something on Friday and be like, oh, mate, back to normal.
Alfa Romeo! Giovinazzi was right in the middle of the restart. Argy-bargy and Raikkonen had lightning-quick reactions to avoid it, but still got clouted.
Is he all right?
Yeah, it's still kind of hard to know, I mean, which driver caused it. I know we spoke at the start about the Bottas thing, but it's like a few of them kind of went, like Latifi kind of went a bit quick, and I think Giovinazzi was the one. I think Giovinazzi went and he stopped the quickest, so I think everyone started to pile into him.
This is the safety car restart, not the first one.
Yes, yes.
Right.
Yeah, sorry, the safety car one.
Maybe Russell, because he left a big old gap and then charged and then stopped a bit, but...
Also true.
Apart from when Giovinazzi nearly flipped, Raikkonen got a couple of points, but again, hardly anyone finished. Beat Vettel. And he got a penalty as well, didn't he? Didn't he get a 5-second penalty for cutting into the pit lane?
Didn't he out-qualify Vettel as well?
Probably. Oh, I think everybody out-qualified but yeah, Raikkonen dived into the pit lane super late and got really angry on the radio at some point. Did you hear that after he was told he'd got the penalty?
Yes.
They said, you've got a 5-second penalty. What for? Yeah, it's a 5-second penalty. What for?
I think if I was his engineer, I'd be like, look, it was our fault. Just totally our fault. So just get on with it. We'll talk about it later.
Yes.
Wow.
Roman Grosjean got super annoyed on the radio with all those dangerous drivers that caused the crash. It is a bit like Oliver Reed telling you that you've had one too many, isn't it?
Oliver Reed, ask your parents.
Okay, well, look, it was either that or I'm at Parkland, so I didn't know which lovable drunk we were going to go with.
Kimi Raikkonen? Haas have just... I think they've given up, haven't they? I mean, they're probably going to ditch both of their drivers next year, do we reckon? What do you reckon, Perez and Hülkenberg?
It's a shame for Magnussen, because he's all right, but he's not Sean, and Grosjean... Was it this year or last year they went, we're going to keep him in the car because he was very good last year at telling us why the car was shit.
Yeah. Maybe he still is and they're just ignoring him.
Well, maybe it's like they go, yeah, we know. You're not helping. Just get out of there.
You can't tell him how to fix it.
Williams! Russell bemoaned that the last red flag cost him a point. But let's be honest, he wouldn't have been near the points if the first red flag hadn't happened. So it all comes out in the wash, doesn't it?
Poor old
Pretty much. If Afterfield hadn't been wiped out, he'd have been 16th, so...
New owners. I didn't actually see the new owners. Who's team principal now? Did they show him?
Yeah, some bloke.
Okay. I've either fell asleep or completely missed it, but...
There's an acting kind of... Who's the guy in charge over the weekend? So there's an acting, not team principal, but like...
Administrator.
Yeah, something or other. But yeah, the new people were there saying hello to everyone.
It
is quite weird. I hadn't really realised how weird it is just to kind of buy the team, fire the owners, and then go to the next race and just be like, yep, you're ours now.
Did they all give themselves the surname Williams?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the royal guy got in a wheelchair and went, I'm Frank Williams, and it just didn't go down well.
It's sort of like the Ramones.
Now it is time for the standings with Terry Saunders.
Okay, so I have decided this week that the driver standings will be famous political slogans. This is going to go well.
Yeah.
In number one, Lewis Hamilton with arrest the cops who killed Breonna Taylor, which I think we all agree with. In second place, strong and stable, it's Valtteri Bottas with the letters falling off behind him. In third place, lips that touch liquor must never touch mine. That's Max Verstappen with a anti, what's the, prohibition, that's it, prohibition thing.
Pro-prohibition.
A chicken, pro-prohibition. A chicken for every pot, that's Lando Norris. That was some, it was on Wikipedia. Yes, we can, says Alexander Albon. Eat the rich, says Lance Stroll. My knee is very tasty. I like Ike, says Daniel Ricciardo, who's a big fan of Ike and Tina Turner. Strong leadership, a clear economic plan, and a brighter, more secure future, says Charles Leclerc. Which, by the way, was the Tory Party's 2015 slogan.
Catchy. I mean, it worked.
Yeah, I mean, it worked. Talking of things that work, change that works for you is Sergio Perez. I mean, I don't know, mate. Liberté, égalité, fraternité is Pierre Gasly. Don't swap horses in the middle of the stream is Carlos Sainz. That's... Do you know who said that?
No.
Who?
Abraham Lincoln.
Did he?
Really?
Although, when I just said it, it was a bit more like Michael Caine. Don't swap horses in the middle of the stream.
Was this after he'd been shot in the head?
I don't know. Look, I just saw the quote. You can look it up yourself. Okay. I haven't got time. Liberty, equality, fraternity, it's Esteban Ocon, and he's moaning, why didn't he get the French one? Well, you should have been higher in the championship, mate. remember the 5th of November, that's Sebastian Vettel, when his contract ends. Proletariat of the world unite. That's just a Russian thing for Kvyat. I'm probably just being racist. New Labour, new danger. Who'd have thought Nico Hülkenberg was a Tory? The lady's not for turning, says Kimi Raikkonen as he spins around on the track. And for the many, not the few, is Antonio Giovinazzi as he causes a pile-up. For the many, not the few. Now, in slightly more desperate turns for the constructor standings, didn't some of the track corners sound a bit like pasta?
Arrabbiata.
Yeah, yeah, thanks.
That's the sauce, isn't it? Arrabbiata.
Oh, whatever. Well, anyway, so I went on Wikipedia, and did you know there is a lot of pastas? Different shapes of pastas. So here are some of the teams if they were pasta. So in first place is Zitti, which is long, narrow, hose-like tubes, which is Mercedes. Bucanatini is thick spaghetti-like pasta with a hole running through the centre. And that hole is Honda. That's Red Bull. Radiatori, I'm not making this up, is pasta that's shaped like radiators. That's McLaren. And Summer's pasta, shaped like penises. That's Racing Point. Stringosi, which is similar to shoelaces. Renault, Shoei. Thinking about it. Filigiere, which is an elongated screw. That's Ferrari, which this year has been an elongated screw-up. Persiatelli, which is virtually identical to Bucatini, which is AlphaTauri. See, made a joke about Red Bull.
Nice.
Campanelli, which is flattened bell-shaped pasta, Alfa Romeo. And Maltagliati is irregular shapes of flat pasta formed from the scraps of pasta production. That's Haas. And Sufalindu is extremely rare pasta made of 256 equal strands of thinly pulled and folded dough and laid in the sun to dry, which is about as rare as a Williams Point.
Wow. Very good. I'm quite hungry for pasta now.
Thanks.
And now it's time for the man of the match of driving.
Lewis
Alex Gasly. Albon. And now it's time for the State of F1 with Terry Saunders.
Formula One is boring. I know we've had two exciting races, but honestly, take out the exciting bits and you're left with long stretches of not much happening. But this week at last, we've had stuff happening, and it was all caused by the data engineer's worst enemy, random carnage. It was genuinely exciting seeing all the cars stop and line up on the grid again for another start, because let's face it, the bit at the start of the race is normally the most fun. So the more of them we have, the better. But as ever, in Formula One, you can't control carnage and enforce it. That's why even though we know sprinklers are actually a good idea, they're actually a bit of a shit idea. But don't worry, I have a solution. Enforced carnage! I know, I said it wouldn't happen, but it should. We've got the safety car. Well, what about the dangerous car?
Nice.
Some bloke whose wife has just left him, he's had a few drinks, comes careening out the pits in tears mid-race, going, Sandra, take me back, I'll change. Or that priest that protested the British Grand Prix years ago. I know it was dangerous and rightfully condemned, but it's enough liven up the end of a dull race. Or can we have a driver just out of contract coming around with something to prove? But oh no, his car is on fire and he's got sharp sticks sticking out the wheel. Or just random pyrotechnics throughout the track. You know, what is it where they have all the pyrotechnics going off? You know, and is it Singapore or Abu Dhabi when all the fireworks go off at the end of the race?
Yeah, both of those, I think, yeah.
Yeah, have it during the race. Give them a fucking scare. But seriously, a serious thing, I think when they do a red flag, that should be the end of a race and they should award points. And the next restart is a new race with new points.
Nice. So that would have been a three races
that Lewis Hamilton extended his lead three times.
Wow.
I see the flaw in that plan.
Extending his lead by 75 points. Yeah, well, apart from that last one, brilliant idea.
Yeah.
I love the idea of the danger car.
Yeah.
Not sure who'd want to sponsor it. I don't know if Mercedes will want to supply a car for that one.
You know that wheel of death thing with the motorbike spinning round?
Yeah.
Like one of those motorbike riders just coming out on a bike and just like zipping through all the cars.
So that was the State of F1 brought to you this season by Carfection. And Terry, where is our video?
Well, you'll be pleased to know that last week I got up at 5:30 one morning to do some filming for the next batch of Carfection videos. And I was in Hampstead Heath with a lot of condoms.
Well, okay.
Just say, wherever we film, there's a lot of condoms on the floor. Which means that it's good you're safe, but pick up your litter.
Okay, Phil. Well, that's really selling it.
Oh, I thought you brought them.
No, they were just there.
Oh, I see.
I took some with me, because, you know, you never know. But, so yeah, we've got some great subjects, like... I fixed Formula 2.
Okay.
Ah.
Yeah. In fact, I fix all of the lower formulae in a way that, if I'm honest, I think is actually a good idea.
Okay.
I'll give you a hint. Team relegation.
Ooh. Okay.
And then we did some other stuff I can't remember. But anyway, so yeah, they'll be coming out soon. I don't know when. Maybe for the Russian Grand Prix, there'll be a new video out. And I expect the internet to hate me. So great.
I'm looking forward to it.
So you can find the state of F1 right now at youtube.com/carfection and stick around to discover the best looking car content anywhere online. That is youtube.com/carfection now. That is it from us. It is goodbye to Phil Tromans.
Goodbye. We haven't had time to talk about Sebastian Vettel trying to buy a Ferrari, specifically one of Michael Schumacher's former F1 cars. You know, we said last week or a couple of weeks ago that he bought one of Nigel Mansell's FW14B Williams. Apparently tried to buy Schumacher a Ferrari, but they were too expensive, so he got the Williams instead.
Wow.
Which seems weird, actually, as I'd rather have the Williams.
It just seems weird that he's buying up all these cars.
Well, he's got loads
what
of money.
Does he know?
And likes cars.
What does he know? Is the second-hand Formula One car market about to crash?
And to Terry Saunders.
We haven't had time to talk about Lewis Hamilton starting a team in Formula EXXX or something. What's it called?
Formula EXXX. That's very different. Extreme E, I think it's called.
Extreme E. Extreme E. Great name for a sport. Extreme E. Good
it's like
him.
Off-road Formula E rally kind of rally cross things. They basically go to the rainforest and wang around there, I think.
Great. So he's going on about the environment and then he's going to put some cars around the road. Oh, I suppose they're electronic cars. It's fine. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, sounds tedious.
So we're going to be back in 2 weeks to discuss the Russian Grand Prix in Russia. In the meantime, check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/forF1Sake, and follow us on Twitter @forF1Sake. Terry, where can people buy merch?
They can go to our fucking website, FF1S. That stands for fuckfuckoneshit.com. shop.
Thanks for listening. See you in a fortnight. I'm G Graz. Goodbye.
Bye.
Don't know why I'm waving. We're on video.
Sports Social Podcast Network.